Better get started anyway. So good afternoon, everyone, and thank you for being here. This session is all about experiences, things that I've come across while working with online archives, more specifically the hybrid archiving part where you will have an on-premises mailbox and an archive in the cloud. Now, interestingly, I really love these notes from the field sessions because they allow me to kind of dump all my experiences right on the table and tell you how it really is. So this isn't about how it's supposed to work. This is really, well, these are the kind of issues that I came across, good and bad, and there are some bad ones in there, but there are some good ones in there too, and kind of give you the hang of how did I solve some of the issues that I came across. What did I do to, you know, work around some of the problems that we had? How did we get some fairly large customers to use this solution? How did we go about migrating to that solution? So basically, kind of the process that I'm going to go through in this slide deck is first talk about the solution. What is it that we're talking about today? What's the architecture like? How does it look like? And then go through the deployment process, not really the deployment, but rather the how does it work in the back? So what does it take to enable an archive in Office 365 while having your mailbox on premises? Which are the bits and pieces that work and that actually come together to give you that experience? And then about halfway through, I'll get to the nasty bits, like, okay, well, and this is what we saw, this is what happened, and this is how it works, and what you can do about it. More importantly, there are some issues out there because of the way things work, because how the architecture is laid out, and because where we are at today from a technical point of view. But we will also see what you can do about those and how that actually works. So for those who don't know me, I'm Michael von Rönnbeck. I'm an Exchange MVP, mainly with my heads up in the cloud. I do lots and lots of hybrid stuff. I do work with some customer quite a bit, though, on Exchange Online Archiving. Here we go. First of all, little introduction, online archiving. The provisioning process is something we will talk about too. Then a 5-minute stop on working with archives, just, you know, for those who don't have as much as experience with Exchange archiving, how does Exchange go about? We'll briefly talk about some of the processes that make things happen in the back, but that won't be a deep dive. There are some other sessions that really go deep into that. For instance, Tony Redmond's sessions on creating retention policies and the best practices around that. So we won't be covering that in depth, though. And then last but not least, we'll talk about the challenges and some of the ways that you can troubleshoot Exchange Online Archiving so that you can, you know, have a better deployment, have a better understanding, and have more happy customers, because that's, in the end, what we're doing it for. So what is Exchange Online Archiving? It's a broad concept, because when I talk about Exchange Online Archiving, I mainly refer to, you know, the on-premises mailbox and the archive in the cloud, but it could just as easily be an on-premises mailbox and an on-premises archive. That's also Exchange Archiving, Online Archiving. So just to make sure, today is all about, you know, the split brain scenario where you have one on-premises, one in the cloud. I'm not going to cover anything within the on-premises, although a lot of things that I will be talking about are in principle the same, but the issues that I'm going to talk about, the challenges that I'm going to see, are rather the challenges specific to this scenario. There is no difference in how the archive works from a process point of view, so how the MFA, the managed folder assistant, actually takes an item and then ships them off to the archive. That's literally the same process, except the archive doesn't live on an Exchange server on premises, but it lives in an Exchange server in the cloud. But it's definitely not the same as EHA, which used to be an archiving solution based on transport, where, you know, you would have, it's not really journaling, but where you would ship off your archives into a cloud solution, and EHA no longer exists. So to give you an idea, and it's basically the same slide as the one that I used before, Exchange Online Archiving in the hybrid deployment leverages a hybrid Exchange deployment as well. So to go through the process of setting it up, you need to set up a hybrid deployment. Now, you don't need to set up a full hybrid deployment. That's, you know, the reason why that is, for that archive to work, you don't need mail flow. You're not required to be able to mail to a user in the cloud. Nor will that archive send an email back via SMTP. However, when you're running the hybrid configuration wizard anyway, it will set up mail flow anyway. Again, you're not required to, you know, have that working for the online archive to work, but it's just a little additional effort. So for anyone trying to set it up manually or to go through the process and just stop halfway after setting up, you know, Exchange Federation, OAuth for e-discovery, which I will talk about briefly later, it makes no sense. So you rather want to go full hybrid, make sure that everything works end-to-end so that you can have that full experience if you'd like to, but also ensure that, you know, the basics are covered, that that is working as it should, so that you have less issues afterwards. One of the things that I noticed during the many deployments is that if you tend to go the last, you know, last mile, really do the full hybrid, you'll live happily after. I mean, there, you'll have less issues because you'll let the hybrid configuration wizard do what it's designed to do, make sure that the full hybrid works, including the Exchange Online archives. So apparently, this was the wrong slide. Sorry about that. So what are the requirements? Because we're going to go hybrid, we need an Exchange 2010 SurfSpec 2 or, you know, preferably SurfSpec 3 in your on-premises environment. If you're going to go, you know, and for everyone, every new customer, that'll be in a SurfSpec 3 server with Office 365. But especially these days, it wouldn't make any sense to deploy a new Exchange 2010 SurfSpec 3 unless you are using Exchange 23 on-premises, which, you know, kind of prevents you of having Exchange 2013. I would strongly recommend going with an Exchange 2013 server. It's not that it will bring you any additional features to the client. It will not give you more retention policies or different retention policies. It will just give you a more happy experience in the hybrid world in the way Exchange 2013 sets up that hybrid configuration. And also, it is a requirement going forward to the future, although there are no dates that set for the entire OAuth experience. So there's new guidance that was released, I think it's about 2 weeks ago, that explains how you can set up OAuth between your on-premises environment and Office 365, and that is a requirement to make the cross-premises e-discovery work, which is kind of, you know, an important part when you're talking about archiving, discovering that information that is in that archive. So the process right now for setting up OAuth is, I'm not going to say tedious or very long. It's rather, you know, you need to get used to it. It's fairly new. The information out there is rather limited. There are some scripts on TechNet, and they work beautifully, but it's still a manual process that you have to go to. Additionally, you know, setting up OAuth in organizations that are not Exchange 2013 SurfSpec 1 doesn't serve much purpose. So that's kind of the things that you need to take into account. Now, one of the questions that I get asked quite regularly is, why would someone set up hybrid online archiving? Why not just do that on premises? Well, we're in an internet-connected world. Not everyone has a lot of bandwidth. Not everyone has low latency lines. I get that. Especially in environments where you have a DSL connection and 500 users, wouldn't be the best solution to recommend. I'm going to be brutally honest. Because you're pulling, you know, you're having those connections to Office 365, and it's basically an online connection. It's not a cached connection. You're not caching the archive anywhere. So that'll be a pretty bad end-user experience if you would do that. However, if you're in a large corporation with a few users or a few thousand users, but you've got a really beefy internet connection, and they're becoming cheaper by the day, then that is actually a really good solution for a number of reasons. The primary reason I get, you know, requested to go in and deploy such a solution is storage. Even though that since Exchange 2010, we've been told, hey, well, you can deploy JBOD and you should deploy JBOD for a number of reasons, good reasons, there are still a lot of companies out there that have that beefy SAN that they want to use. However, when we're talking archiving, one of the primary purposes is PST files, those pesky PST files. We want to get rid of them. So you want to import them somewhere where you can control them, where the data is safe, where you as an admin know where the data is and what you can do with it. You can even encrypt it and so forth and so on, which is a good thing. But, you know, imagine this scenario. I'm working with a customer, about 16,000 seats. They have 60 terabytes of PST files. So if you go to your SAN administrators and you tell them, hey, I need an additional 60 terabytes per copy, on a few databases. So if you follow Ross's advice, having four databases, you know, kind of spread them around. They'll be for 240 terabytes. It becomes a lot, and SAN storage isn't cheap. So your archives become very, very, very expensive, which beats the purpose of having an archive. Especially in Outlook 2013, we have the Outlook slider, which, you know, gives you a huge mailbox. You can set the slider to only keep 6 months offline, and you'll have a small OSD file. So why would you then go for an archive? So it's a little trade-off that you have to look at. So first of all, if you don't have the storage, you don't have the money for the storage, or you don't want to spend expensive storage for Exchange Online Archiving, this is a pretty good solution. You'll get to offload that huge amount of data to Office 365. And as we will be talking about later, that is also a challenge because, you know, that same customer that I talked about, 60 terabytes in PSD files, well, I need to find a way to somehow ship them from on-premises to Office 365. Whether I, or not I got a beefy internet connection, it's going to take me a while to get 60 terabytes across the line. Another reason why you would do that, well, if you're already running hybrid, why not just use all the features that are there? A lot of customers have hybrid deployments. Why not just do it? There's no reason not doing it. It's just flipping a switch and it'll work. So that's one of the other reasons, just out of ease. And another reason why you could or should do it maybe is if you're already using online archiving, but you're trying to, you know, spec down the environment on premises, you can just use mailbox moves and move that archive to Office 365. We'll be talking about some of the specifics with the moves that we're going to do, but it's a really good solution to just, you know, start offboarding to Office 365 in a really easy way. So at the same time, it doesn't require much effort when you went through all the hoops and all the things that you need to do. It's something very, very specific, especially from a provisioning point of view. So what I'm going to walk through now is how do I get from an on-premises mailbox-only user to an on-premises mailbox with a cloud archive? And it's a multi-step process, meaning there is a multi-step process in the back. Typically, as an admin, as I said, you flip the switch. You say, provision the archive, and the magic happens. That thingy, it takes a while before it actually active. So let's take a look how it looks from a high-level point of view. We've got a user mailbox. That's a given. It's on-premises. It's running fine. Well, I'm assuming that it's running fine, and that's also a prerequisite that your Exchange environment is healthy. And you enable the remote archive. You can do that through PowerShell. You can do that through the EAC. Doesn't matter. There are many ways where in how you can enable that archive. What happens, DirSync will do some trickery, some magic, and eventually the request to create an archive will get into Exchange Online. The archive will be created in Exchange Online, but that doesn't mean that your user has the archive. No, at that point, DirSync will get a response back from Exchange Online, which will then write an attribute into your on-premises environment, which actually activates the archive, and your user is happy. So what you see here, and I hope it's readable to everyone. If not, the slide decks should be on Yammer. To your left, you have the on-premises mailbox state. So I filtered that on-premises mailbox for that test user to query all the archive attributes. And as you can see, there is no archive. Now, in a hybrid deployment, in a full hybrid deployment, what you'll have is an on-premises mailbox and a cloud mail user, which corresponds with that user. They are tied together. They are the same object. Well, they are two different objects in the organization, but they represent the one and same mailbox, right? So this is a situation before we do anything. As an admin, you then go into EAC. You go to the mailboxes part, and there's at the right-hand side the archiving enable feature. It pops up a wizard, and you'll actually be able to provision that archive. It's just, you know, you select it, that it's an online archive, and you're good to go. Again, the prerequisite here is that you already went through the process of setting up a hybrid. If you didn't set up a hybrid configuration prior to that, you won't have the option to create an online archive. I mean, online archive in Office 365. As I demonstrate as well, enable mailbox, identity the user, you specify it's a remote archive, you specify the archive domain, and the domain that you use there will be your service domain. So the service domain, since the Wave 15 in Office 365, will be your tenant name .mail.microsoft.com. So that's something that should be fairly easy to figure out. What actually happens in this step, as soon as you save those changes, the on-premises user object will get stamped with a few new attributes, one of them being an archive GUID. So it'll give you one. It'll have an archive name, ELC mailbox flags, and the remote recipient type will change as well. That's what's happened. So far, nothing changes for the end user. Nothing else happens. Now, what you will see is this kind of looks like this as soon as you did that. So the archive is there, the archive domain is there, because that's what you entered. But in Office 365, so in Exchange Online, remote PowerShell, if you do a get mail user for that same user, you query the archive attributes, it's still empty. That's because DirSync hasn't run yet. DirSync runs every 3 hours, so it takes a while before it actually starts doing something in Exchange Online. So if you're lucky, you enable an archive, and 5 minutes after that, DirSync runs. The first step is complete within 5 minutes. However, if you're unlucky, well, it doesn't have to do a lot with being lucky or unlucky, but in worst case scenario, it literally takes 2 hours and 59 minutes before DirSync runs again, maybe a little more depending on your schedule. So it might take a while until you get from step one to step two. Again, this is fully transparent to you guys, so you could just click enable and turn your back and do something else. But it's very important from an end user perspective. If you're telling them, hey, I'm going to provision you with an archive, they shouldn't expect to have that archive right away. That is kind of slightly different with an on-premises experience where you could provision an archive and have it ready in 2 minutes. Theoretically, we could do this here as well, but that would involve us having to run DirSync manually a few times. So this is the first step. Second step, let's do DirSync, OK? DirSync will actually run, or you can force it. And what you need to see is that the four-step process in a hybrid deployment runs perfectly without any issues. What actually happens in this step is that the attributes that we are created are just being sent to Windows Azure AD, which then does a backsync to the Exchange Online Forest, which will pick up those settings and see, oh, wait a second, there's something that changed. However, what you will now see is that the on-premises environment still shows a state of hosted pending. I'm still waiting for something, whereas DirSync caused Exchange Online to actually provision and create the archive. So now the mail user who is tied to the mailbox on premises also has that archive available. So you'll see that the archive with the same GUID is created. It'll have a quota, it'll have a database, and it will show an archive status of being active. Your user still doesn't have an archive at this step. We have to wait for another DirSync to happen. So worst case scenario, we are 3 hours after you click the save button. Exchange Online has provisioned that archive. And we now need to wait for the second time that DirSync runs. Because as soon as you enable the hybrid deployment, you're actually allowing the DirSync to write back a few attributes into your on-premises environment. And one of these attributes is the MS Exchange archive status. And that's actually the bit that flips, that tells the on-premise environment whether it's hosted pending or whether it's active. And that's what happens in this step. So you wait for the DirSync to run. And we'll go through the DirSync tools in just a second. And you will see that the user object actually gets stamped with that MS Exchange archive status for a value of 1. So when we then take a look again at the on-premises mailbox and the cloud user that is connected to that mailbox, you will see that now the archive state is hosted provisioned. It's an active one. The one is available and you can connect to. So from this point on, what will happen is that your user will do an auto-discover request against your Exchange on-premises environment, because that's where his mailbox lives. He gets back an auto-discover result. And in that auto-discover result will actually be an additional mailbox. But I'm not going to spoil what we're going to talk about later. I'm going to show you that out of Discover results. But as from now, the archive should be available. There might be a slight delay because of caching here and there. That's what I noticed. It's not instantaneously after you run the dir sync, but it shouldn't last much more than a few minutes. Okay. So how do these archives show up in Outlook and OWA? Well, pretty much the same way as they do in the on-premises archive. It's a sort of secondary mailbox that sits there. It's not cached. You don't have as much control over it as you do with a regular mailbox because it's an archive. But there's literally no change for the end user. They just get the online archive there. The AutoDiscover response that I talked about before will have an alternative mailbox. So to Outlook, it's literally a second mailbox that's being opened. So what does that do with AutoDiscover? It changes the process a little bit, or it extends the process. So me as a user, I'll hit AutoDiscover. I'll tell them, hey, here's my credentials. Go and fetch my Outlook connection data. And the on-premises environment will actually read all the data for my mailbox and return it in an XML file. And there will be the alternative mailbox kind of piece in the AutoDiscover result. And what you can see here is that there is another SMTP address. And for those who saw the GUID from my archive at my service domain is the primary SMTP address. So what my Outlook client will do then is do a second AutoDiscover against the service domain and get the connection information for that mailbox, for that archive. So when you fire up Outlook, it'll do its auto-discover. Your mailbox will already open, but there will be a slight delay before the online archive will be available. So if you're in a hurry and you open up Outlook and you click on the archive, you'll get a message, the archive isn't available. Wait a few seconds for the second auto-discover to work, for the authentication to happen, so that the archive can actually open up in Outlook. The funny thing is that we will be talking about that authentication in just a bit because there is a change, and that is a change in user behavior that sometimes can be a little bit, a little bit confusing, especially to end users. So how do you see whether or not you have a connection to that archive and whether or not it's active? Well, if you go into the connection status of Outlook, control right click the Outlook item in the taskbar, you can actually see that next to the connections to your on-premises server, it will now have a connection to Office 365, just as if it would be a mailbox. The GUID that you see there is, again, the GUID from your own archive. So there's nothing fancy going on there. Pretty much works the same way. That's also the case in OWA. As you can see here, it's an empty archive, but the archive will just show up as if it were a secondary mailbox. In this case, however, there is no client that does the auto-discover requests. It's actually the server that's taking care of that. So as soon as you open up your mailbox, it will see there is an archive. It will actually open the connection to Office 365 in the back for you, and then show that, display that in your OWA, right? So that's pretty much, laying down the groundwork for how archives work, how the provisioning process works. And the key thing here to understand is, the delay. Make sure that you communicate that delay to your users. If you don't want to, then, force their sync. But basically, most of my customers that I work with, I tell them, hey, I'll enable it today and you'll have it tomorrow, which is pretty accurate in most cases, depending on when you enable the archive for the user. So working with archives, again, this is, laying the groundwork out for later discussions. Basically, it's about assigning policies, retention policies, designing them, and then users being able either to use the default retention policies that you created, so that if everything needs to be archived after 6 months, great, perfect, they don't touch it. But maybe you want to give them some more control, you have some more retention policies, retention tags in there in that policy that you assign to the users, which allow them to themselves either pick whether they want to move an item after 6 months, maybe delete it after a few months. So they can really do that on an individual folder level. They can do that on an item level. So they could potentially override the policies that you set or the defaults that you set. Now, this could be by design, obviously, if you want them to have that control, but this also represents an issue from a planning point of view, and we will be talking about that in just a moment. But keep that in mind, because especially with online archiving, you know, in the hybrid deployment, retention policies are extremely important. One thing we do not want, and I mean we, it's not a recommendation from Microsoft or anything, but one thing I really recommend you not to do is try and move items manually into that archive or out of that archive, because the experience might be not very good. But we'll talk about that right away. So what actually happens in the back? What happens if an item gets tagged? So as soon as the retention policy gets applied, the MFA, the managed folder assistant, goes through the mailbox, it will actually check all the items that apply to the retention policy, and we'll see if it expired or not. If it didn't expire, fine. But it will tag them with an archive date, the archive period, and the archive tag. So every item will get that information stamped to it so that the managed folder assistant can use that information to decide whether or not it should archive an item when it passes over it. The MFA, by the way, is an assistant that runs, you know, on a work policy base, so it, you know, it, you can run it more often if you would like to, but the defaults are pretty much good. I mean, it doesn't immediately archive an item, so it's not because I received an item at 2 o'clock in the afternoon that it will expire exactly 6 months later at 2 o'clock in the afternoon. Somewhere in that period, you know, after 6 months, the item will get moved to the archive, and literally, it shouldn't really matter. What should matter are the retention policies, as I said, especially if you're already using online archiving on premises. Make sure that you keep an eye on those retention policies, because we're going to need to do something with them later on if we want to move mailboxes to Office 365 or if we want to move them back and forth. So, briefly talked about the managed folder assistant. So it's a once per day work cycle. It's configurable, but again, I've never been in an environment, even the larger ones, that require you to make any change. There was one time, though, where there were so many mailboxes that the MFA kind of had, you know, trouble getting through all the mailboxes on a once-a-day basis. And you can throttle it back a little bit so that it runs once every 2 days. Is that something very common? No. So that's why I'm not spending much time, you know, talking about that. This is some of the internals. Again, this might interest you from a technical point of view, but it doesn't really, you know, change the way we work with Exchange Online Archives at all. However, if you need additional resources, as I said, go and see Tony's session on retention policies. It's recorded, or I'm not sure if it already ran, but if it did, go and see the recording, because it fits really well with this session. So with the technical groundwork that we're laying here and the information that he will be giving, tie them together and you'll be able to create some beautiful things. Okay, so we're at the point that we will start talking about some of the challenges, some of the problems. And I tried, you know, laying them out as I got to them. The biggest one is archive provisioning. How on earth do you go about, you know, to provision large archives? So the thing is that what I noticed, if you have a large on-premises mailbox that has a history of 10, maybe 15, 20 years. Well, 20 years is maybe long. 10 years is more reasonable. 15 gig mailbox. And you just say, enable archive. Hey, that's beautiful. 6 hours later, day after, the guy comes into the office. Well, if he comes into the office at the wrong moment, what will actually happen is that, you know, you have that 15 gig mailbox with a lot of data, especially in cache mode. And the MFA runs through the mailbox and says, oh, here are a bunch of items that I need to move to the archive. So it starts moving them to the archive. And then Outlook says, OK, oh, that item disappeared. Let's do a sync. Another item disappeared. Let's sync again. So you'll have a kind of catch-up game where a lot of items are being synced to the archive, a lot of items are disappearing from the mailbox, and Outlook is playing catch-up. The problem is Outlook doesn't do a very good job at that. It kind of gets very slow, very quickly, and ends up in a not responding state for the remainder of the process. So experiment with it, had a 15 gig mailbox, enabled it through the MFA, logged in into OAuth, and about 48 hours later, I could use Outlook again. Not really what you want to happen. If you do it over the weekend, you might, you know, that might work, but still, the cache on the Outlook client, so on the Outlook client, thinks it has 15 gigs, whereas the server now has 1 gig of data. So Monday morning, it comes in, it starts syncing all the changes, and it doesn't do a very good job at it. So there is a KB article, which literally came out about 3 or 4 weeks before the conference started, which describes this process in an Exchange 2010 environment, which you know should help you get around this process. However, you know, there is nothing much that you can do about it right now. You can, you know, start with a retention policy that says, you know, everything after 15 years, and then 10 years, and then 5 years, so that you'll start moving off items more slowly to the archive. In the meantime, use Outlook in online mode, you'll be fine. Use OWA, you'll be fine. But fairly large mailboxes, that can be a painful process. It's not ideal. There's no real solution out there. It's just something that you have to go through. I will, however, give you a tip later on how you could kind of deal with it, because partially it seems to be the fact that it's syncing to Office 365 that's causing an additional delay for some reason. So another thing that I came across, bandwidth considerations. I'm sure we all run into the question of how much is enough? What do we need to actually, you know, be able to work with that? And it's really, really, really difficult to know, okay, I need 10 megs, I need 100 megs. There is the Exchange bandwidth calculator, which does a fairly good job at assessing, you know, the amount of data that you'll be exchanging, but you're not talking about a primary mailbox here, you're talking about an archive mailbox, which should have, I'm not saying stale data, but data that you shouldn't be accessing as much as you do with your primary mailbox, which is another tip. Make sure that when you're designing the retention policy, that when you're talking to your customer, that they are not forcing them, you know, your users to move everything to their archive after 6 months when they still use their items in that archive very heavily. Because if you're heavily working in the archive, especially in this scenario, not a happy camper. I tell you, it's not a beautiful sight. I've seen people cry and smash their computers because it's sometimes really slow. Because you might have a beefy network connection at work, which is great, and you'll be happy and you'll be doing stuff, but then they take their laptops home, and they have a DSL connection, and they want to do the same thing, and then the latency kicks in, and they click a message, and it takes 6 seconds to open the message, and they want to download an attachment, 5 meg attachment. Hey, it takes a while before it gets downloaded from the archive, so you don't want to have them work in the archive. You want them to consult the archive when they really need it, but they shouldn't be working in there, right? Another thing is that, you know, you have that vast amount of data in Exchange. Awesome. How much data is going to be archived? What data is eligible to go into that archive? How do you know that? There is no way that you can, you know, ask Exchange, give me the information on how much data you will be archiving. Because the MFA needs to run through the mailbox, but as it runs through the mailbox, it will already start copying it over. So there is no predictive way to know my archives will be 6 gigs a mailbox, 2 gigs, 5 gigs. Let's call it out. Do you know how many data is older than 5 years in your mailbox? Anyone, shout it out. You say, yeah, about 10,000. I have no idea. I have data in my mailbox, but I could have like 1,000 emails from yesterday or last year, and maybe 10,000 the year before, but it could be the other way around. I have no idea. And frankly, I don't care. You know, if I want an email, I just fire up search in Outlook, and that works fine. That's how it should be. So you're kind of in the dilemma. What do you do at this stage? Well, it took me a while to figure out what the best thing would be, but I created a script. It's conveniently called Estimate Archive Size, and it has a switch of age limit. So depending on the default policy that you are deploying, meaning 6 months, a year, 2 years, 5 years, move to archive, depending on what you're doing, you can run this script against your environment, and it will actually go through each mailbox, each item in the mailbox and check whether or not that item is an item that will be archived. And it will report on that. There's two things. It's a great, great script. And I really love it, not because I wrote it, but it's great. But slow as hell. I mean, it's using Exchange Web Services to go through each mailbox, each item in each mailbox. So the larger your mailboxes are, the longer it takes, right? It's kind of logical. Another thing, it's an estimation. It's not very accurate. I had to kind of, you know, put things together fairly quickly. It doesn't take into account calorie items it does take them into account, but it doesn't take into account exclusions. So if you design a retention policy which says, I don't want to archive calorie items or I want to do this or that, it just goes through all the items, composes a list of items, and says, hey, here are all the items that are older than the age limit that you specified, which is good. It gives you an estimation, but it will not be 100% accurate. Can you make it more accurate? Yes. Will it take you a lot of work? Probably. I got a little bit of help from some of the other MVPs because I'm not a developer. So if you're a developer, by all means, make it better and share it with everyone because people will like this. Basically, what the script does, it goes into the mailbox using EWS and it takes a look at the mappy properties, the same property that the MFA looks at. It's the PR message size object property, mappy property, and it takes that value, knows it's in bytes, and then counts them all per mailbox. Gives you a fairly good and nice overview. Outlook. Okay, who likes Outlook? No one? Oh, okay, a few people. Okay, I like Outlook sometimes. I don't like Outlook in this scenario. My biggest problem with Exchange Online Archiving is that pesky Outlook client. It is really horrible at times. Because remember when I told you that I didn't like you want to drag and drop messages? If you do folder operations like that on premises, it's like snap. It does that really quickly. However, that's because you're well connected and it works really well. But in this scenario, you're connected to the cloud. You have a bandwidth consideration, but more importantly, you have a latency consideration. So what happens when you are working in your inbox and you're like, I don't need this item, and I'm not going to wait until it's 6 months later. I'm going to move it to my archive. Hey, that's great. It'll move the message to the archive, but Outlook treats that action as what I call a foreground operation. It'll do that instantaneously. It will start doing it while you're in Outlook, which might be what you want. However, the problem is that if it takes 30 seconds to move that message to the archive mailbox, your Outlook will go into a not responding state for 30 seconds. So imagine one of your users taking a 50 meg attachment on a DSL connection with a 1 meg upload and drag and dropping it in the archive. You can go down and have lunch. It'll take 5-6 minutes before your Outlook literally comes out of that not responding state. And restarting Outlook right away won't work. So that's something that you need to take into account. Is there a fix? No. I know they're looking into it, and I'm sure that that will get solved eventually. It's just the way how Exchange and Outlook handle things. But in this case, is this a real problem? It doesn't have to be. You know, you just have to educate your users. Tell them not to do it. I know, it's a problem. Users don't listen. But they'll find out the hard way, and they'll listen eventually. Don't let them move messages manually. Just, you know, there's retention policies, and maybe let them move items in a special folder to be archived and to be forgotten. Fine. If they have their own folder structure, fine, let them use that. But tell them not to drag and drop big messages. They can do that from time to time. There's no problem with it. It'll work. The message will get moved, and it'll work beautifully. But it just takes time, and Outlook doesn't cope well. Alternatively, use OWA. So we've seen quite a lot of improvements in OWA during Mac, which makes it a very good client, which makes it a client which might replace Outlook for some of your users. Or if you tell them, hey, if you really want to do that, log into OWA and make that happen, because they won't have the not responding state. Exchange doesn't have the not responding state. It always responds. So rely on the exchange way of things. That's kind of how I like to put it out there. Leverage the infrastructure that's there and how that works and how it actually, you know, copes with that. Authentication, I already said it earlier. As soon as you have a mailbox in Office 365, you'll be using basic authentication. So I'm a happy user. I have a mailbox on premises, and my administrator said, OK, here is a cloud archive. Yay. The day later, I get into the office, you know, 6-hour delay. I fire up my Outlook, bam, authentication prompt. I didn't see that yesterday. My Outlook users used to log in normally. Why am I seeing that authentication prompt? Well, it's basic authentication to Office 365. You're opening a mailbox. That's what happens. So what happens is that your user actually has to log into Office 365. Now the fun starts. Oh, yeah, yeah, I know this prompt. You know, I know how this looks like. I'll just use domain backslash my username and my password. OK, pop up again. Tries it again, or even worse, wrong password, because I don't know what password to use. Let me try this. Let me try something else. Well, that doesn't work. You're authenticating against Office 365, which means that you need to use your UPN. So user education, again, is very crucial here. Tell them you will be getting an authentication pop-up. Yes, you will be using your UPN. By the way, if you can, make sure the UPN matches the email address, because that makes their life easy. Otherwise, you will have to go up to your users and tell them, well, you will have to use a UPN. And they will be like, a UP what? Oh, yeah, it's that thing that looks like an email address but isn't your email address. That always works well. So you know, they must use the UPN to log in. And again, if you're using ADFS, make sure that it works. Because if you cannot authenticate, guess what? Office 365 will say, hey, you're not authenticated. I'm not showing you the mailbox. Result will be this, an error message. Result of something similar will be something like this. Let me quickly open up my mailbox and my company. I should have it open here. So here's a regular mailbox, and here's the archive. I broke it on purpose, by the way. It would be very bad for me to show this and tell you, hey, I do this all the time. that would be awful, wouldn't it? So no, this is what you get. Even in OAuth, if authentication doesn't work, this is what you'll get. Not a very good experience, though. So keep that into account. If you're using ADFS, it is a critical part of your environment, and you need to use that. And you need to make sure that it's highly available either way. Monitoring is important at that point too. Not always easy, I get it, but yeah, you shouldn't forget about it. So we had this. So what do you do? Archive on premises or archive in the cloud? As I said earlier, large mailboxes, or even, you know, fairly reasonable sized mailboxes, whatever reasonable is, immediately enabling the archive in the cloud isn't a very good idea. It's a slow process. Rather try doing this. Create an on-premises archive. Yes, this means that you need a little storage to work with, but there can be very little storage, because you now know how much data you will be moving to the archive because you use the archive estimation size script. Make an on-premises archive. Push all the data in. So you'll have a 10 gig on-premises archive. And then ship it off to Office 365, because you have a hybrid deployment. So you can just do a remote mailbox move. The MFA will process the items, quickly move them into the archive on premises, because it's like on the same server, or maybe, you know, it's neighbor server, doesn't matter, it's on premises, highly connected, works very well. And then you ship it off in one blob mailbox, archive mailbox, to Office 365. I found out that that appears to be the best way to provision Exchange Online archives. It works really, really well. Needs a little bit more planning on the Exchange side on premises, because you need that, you know, temporary data to store it on. But I'm pretty sure you'll be able to find a 500 gig disk, maybe make two copies out of it to protect it a little bit, to make that happen. And so the customer that was talking about, the fairly large one, what they are doing is they have a single database with two copies, because, you know, it's just a transient situation where you'll be in for maybe a day or two. So they're creating the on-premises archives. They're filling them up until the database is like 350 gigs, maybe 400 gigabytes. Then they ship all the archives to Office 365. They delete the mailbox database where the archive is, and they create a new one. So they free up the disk space, and they create a new database, fill it up again, ship it off to Office 365, delete it again. That's a process they go through. Is it a tedious process? Not really. It's something that you need to follow up with. That's true. But again, you're in a process of moving to a solution, and that works really, really, really good. Which now brings me into the situation of, you know, remote mailbox moves. How does that work? What are the challenges there? What are the things there? Well, it, you know, leverages the power of the mailbox replication service, which means that it's really, really good. Now, I got a question earlier this morning, really interesting. There is an item limit in Office 365, right? So if you're using the MRS of 25 megs, so if you're using the MRS to move a mailbox, any item that's larger as 25 megs will stay behind, unless you tell the mailbox move to fail when it cannot move an item. So on-premises, it doesn't care about item sizes, right? And we talk about that, so keep that in mind. It's just something that we need to talk about in a few minutes. But item sizes are also very important in this case. The MFA, for instance, if you provision an archive to Office 365 right away, every item that's larger as 25 megs will never get moved to Office 365. Instead, the event log on the server where the mailbox is hosted will throw an error and says, hey, that something gibberish. It doesn't say, hey, I couldn't move it because it's larger than 25 megs. It's like, there's an error, blah, 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 blah. Not the best experience, though. I know, I understand, but it's logged. It's something that you know. There is a script out there, and I'll show it in a minute, which helps you identify items larger as 25 megs in a mailbox. So take that into account. Anyway, back to the mailbox moves. It's a heck of a lot better than importing PSTs. Has anyone ever tried importing a PST immediately into Office 365 mailboxes? Yes. How was it?
A couple of hundred megs, about a week and a half.
Yeah, there you go. For some reason, those pesky PSTs keep following us. It's like, we really want to get rid of them. Well, you know, import them on premises. There are fairly good solutions out there to do that fairly quickly. It's still a painful process, but once they're in Exchange, use MRS to move it over, and it's fairly quick. At least it's much quicker than doing a PST. And much, much less issues. So from a high-level point of view, you just initiate a move. The move starts, creates the hierarchy, and then copies over the content, and then finalizes the move. It's a mailbox move. It's an archive mailbox, but it's a regular mailbox move, as you would move other mailboxes to Office 365. There are no differences there. However, again, dir-sync is very, very important in this scenario. Once you move that mailbox to Office 365, your archive might become disconnected for a while from the Outlook client if your user is actively working in Outlook. At one point, the archive will disappear on premises, and your Outlook will be like, oh, what happened? I don't have the archive anymore. So again, explain your users. Your archive will not be available for a short period of time until you fire up Outlook a few times. It does the auto-discover. It then sees, oh, my archive moved to that other domain. Then does the second auto-discover. You'll get the authentication prompt, which we talked about. And all is good again. But make sure to warn them up front, because you know you have to fire up Outlook again. They will get the message box telling you your administrator made a change. Please restart Outlook. But there will be a brief moment if they're working in the archive that they will get an error message like the one that we saw before, like, hey, I have no idea where your archive has gone. So make sure that you communicate that well in time. Another thing, which I said earlier, retention policies. They are crucial here. You need them. Obviously, you do. But when you move mailboxes between on-premises and the cloud, even archives, if you have an on-premises archive already set up, which means that you have a retention policy on-premises, and you have these tags tied to that retention policy. However, if you would move them to Office 365 without doing anything else, how does Exchange Online know what policies you have on-premises? How does it know what retention tags you have used in that retention policy? So that's basically a situation you don't want to end up with. So what you need to do, mailboxes, archive mailboxes, in order for them to move to Office 365, is export the retention policies that you're using on premises and the retention tags, and then import them into Office 365 to make sure they exist in both worlds. This means that this is a process that you need to maintain. If you ever create new retention policies, make sure that these new ones, these new item the retention tags and retention policies are known in Exchange Online, because you don't want to end up in the situation where, you know, all the items get untagged, even, you know, the personal tags, because you couldn't find the retention tags. UM mailbox policies. This is, so I was talking about setting up hybrid, a full hybrid deployment, right? If you run through the hybrid configuration wizard, basically your life's good. However, if you're using unified messaging on premises, some of you might know this, if you move a mailbox from on-premises to the cloud, then you need to also create the UM mailbox policies in the cloud and actually make sure that they are kind of tied together so that when you move a mailbox, the UM properties aren't lost and you can still use some of the functionality. This also happens when you only move an archive. So imagine you're in a situation where you will never move a mailbox to Office 365, but you want to put all your archives there and you're using UM. Well, if you want to move an archive of an UM-enabled user, you have to create the UM mailbox policies in the cloud as well. You'll never use them. There's no point for them to ask for this. It's one of my biggest asks because, you know, why set up UM policies in Office 365 if I'm only going to have archives in there? It's not that I'm doing something with UM. But still, it's something that you need to know. You need to do that. You need to make sure that that's set up correctly too. Maybe some of you are using a third-party archiving solution. Hey, great. There's no problem with that, but some people might be willing to move to Office 365 with their archives. That's a problem. I came across a few instances of that where moving off the archiving solution proved very problematic. Not every archiving solution out there ties in with Office 365 right away. So the approach there is either you go PST, which we talked about just a few moments ago. It's not really a happy way to do. Basically, what I ended up doing in all of the cases is take the archive, the third-party archive, merge it again in the mailbox, which in some situations is something, you know, quite painful for some users because they'll have a fairly large set. There are some solutions that will allow you to take the archive and push it into an Exchange Online archive on premises, which is great because then you can move it off to Office 365 again. But it's not really a very good experience overall, is it? December 6, 2013, I remember very vividly what happened. I was at a customer. It was a happy afternoon. I was talking to my customer, and life was great. And then all of a sudden, someone from the help desk came, hey, we're getting some weird, you know, issues in Exchange, like recipients cannot be found and stuff. I was like, this is weird. Okay, let's have a look. And indeed, some NDRs happened. Recipients couldn't be found. And then we fairly quickly found out that a guy kind of deleted an organizational unit. Not too bad. But for some reason, Active Directory really worked well that day. And the entire forest converged in about 15 minutes. So by the time we found out what the issue was, there was no way of recovering them. And of course, they didn't have the recycle bin in AD. So we kicked off the disaster recovery process, you know, go back to the good old-fashioned backups to get the items back in. And I was all in the process of recovering, and I didn't think about dirsync. I forgot about dirsync. So I was halfway through the recovery of AD, while all of a sudden I was like, uh-oh, I hope that dirsync didn't run in the meantime. It ran. Happens, right? So it's not a problem. Well, it is a problem. But in the end, you know, your users get restored. Everything is back, you know, up and running on premises. Dirsync will pick up those user accounts and sync them back to the cloud. That's what you would expect, right? Not really. This is what we saw with about 80% of all our archive users. They didn't have an archive, the archive didn't work anymore, and we got an error in the portal saying, you know, Exchange failed to sync the archive GUID zeros. of mailbox, the mailbox ID, to the Cloud Archive, and an archive ID. So what happened is the Cloud Archives got disconnected from the on-premises attributes because something in the restore process didn't work well. Whatever it was a lot of problems to go through at that time. So basically, everyone lost their archives. Well, lost is not really a good word. They got disconnected. We couldn't reconnect them ourselves, so we had to open a support call. And the solution is actually more easy than I expected. We told them, hey, this is what happened. This is the old GUID. This is the new GUID. What do we do? Office 365 support will actually merge them together again. Their sync runs, and everything is happy again. Lessons learned from this. If you ever run into an accidental deletion, first make sure that you have your recycle bin enabled, because that will save you a lot of trouble. I know some customers cannot do that yet, but you ought to be able to do that, right? Second of all, run to your DirSync server, take it from the network so that it cannot make any changes. That will make your life easy. Because once you restore AD, the objects will be exactly the same as before. You plug DirSync back in, and it will not even notice there was an accidental deletion to begin with. So you will not have an issue afterwards. DirSync will just not have run for a few hours. Of course, I'm sure someone will run into the issue that you accidentally deleted and 2 minutes later DirSync runs. There's nothing you can do about that. But take it into account. Put it in, you know, big letters on your AD disaster recovery, disable DirSync. because there was literally like a 48-hour marathon to get everything back up and running, and not a happy place to be in. So as you can see, there are some issues that you can run into, but is that really a problem? No. It really works well. I've been working with an online archive since the 2010 era. So my mailbox on premises and an archive in Office 365, and I'm happy with it because I don't live in the archive. I have one colleague who keeps, you know, saying, oh, it's slow and it doesn't work really well. I'm like, yeah, guy, you're working literally every day in that archive. You're doing way too much stuff. He shouldn't. That's the only caveat that there is to this solution, but it really works well. So some of the observed issues, disconnected archives. I just mentioned how they can go disconnected, but sometimes human error, sometimes attributes that change for no reason. Well, there is a reason, but the guy who changed it or made the change happen doesn't want to tell you. How can you see that? Well, you do a get mailbox, the archive attributes, you do a get mail user in Office 365, and you see that the GUID isn't the same. If that ever happens, call support and make sure that it can merge it together. That's not a problem. Connectivity issues, I previously talked about it. If auto-discover doesn't work, auto-discover is important. You'll get the cannot open the mailbox. If ADFS is used and is not working, you get a I cannot open it. If you have transient network issues, meaning that sometimes you have a connection, sometimes you don't, the archive doesn't cope very well. But that's in general with pretty much everything doesn't cope very well if the network isn't working very well, right? However, I will give you that Outlook is a sensitive tool. It doesn't handle any latency very well. Just how things work. If you have a beefy internet connection with low latency, you'll be more than happy to use it, but please don't do that on a DSL connection because that really doesn't work. A few things that you'll run into, and it's not specific to this solution, especially the two last ones, is like items are not being moved to the archive after the retention period. If it's a 25 meg or larger item, it's because of the item limit in Office 365, right? So that'll get logged in the event log, and there you will see it didn't move the item. It will not remove the item, but it will not move it. So sometimes you'll see that a folder is empty except for one message, even though that message is like 6 years old. It's probably because that message is too large. What can you do about it? Leave it there, export it to a PSD. I know, I told you to get rid of them. Now I'm telling you to put them in the PSD, or just take the attachment, put it on a SkyDrive, OneDrive, on SharePoint. I don't care. Do something with it, especially if you want to use that. Because if you're going to move the mailbox to Office 365 afterwards, which is perfectly fine, it won't get moved anyway because it's over the message limit. So something that you need to take into account. Another thing that I get asked quite a lot of asks, how do you go about if someone leaves the company? There is no one way to do it. There are many ways to handle that. Disabled mailboxes, for instance, are a very good way to work with it because it doesn't take up a license and it keeps the archive where it needs to be. But that isn't, you know, something that people readily know how to work with. So they need to get accustomed to that. They might need to change on a technical way how they deal with someone leaving the company. I've seen customers use the disabled mailboxes feature. I've seen customers move the archive on premises, export it to a PSD file, and store it on some archiving solution, which is kind of funny. Take an archive, put it on premises, and put it in, anyway. These are kind of the procedural, the logical things to think about when you are using an archive, because it's just, you know, it's not typically about an Exchange archive. You'll have it with any archiving solution. How do you deal with these scenarios? So what I found to be very useful tools when troubleshooting is MFC MAPI. It's an awesome tool. It gives you the insight in the mailbox. Is it something you want to go into every day in the morning at 8 a.m. on a Monday? No, you don't want to do that. However, it does give you an idea whether or not an item got stamped or not. It does tell you, hey, it should have been taken, but it didn't. So this is, again, something when you're deep troubleshooting it, but it will give you that idea whether or not something is wrong. Maybe an item didn't get stamped, although it should have. But more importantly, the event logs. So there are a few things that you should take a look at when you're troubleshooting the archiving process. You're actually troubleshooting the MFA, the Managed Folder Assistant, which is responsible of making that mailbox move, right? So what you should do is, and I put them here for your reference, the MS Exchange Assistants, the Mailbox Assistant Service, the Lifecycle Assistant, and the ELC Library, these are the event logs or the event log level that you have to up a little bit. Put them to expert level, that's what I usually do. You'll get a ton of information, and I mean really a lot of information in there, some useful, some not. But it will really give you a lot of insight into how the process works and where it fails. Something not many people know, the export mailbox diagnostics log is extremely useful. Because if you use the export mailbox diagnostics log, you give the mailbox ID and then the component MRM, you'll actually get some information which tells you why it didn't run, why it couldn't process a mailbox. And in this case, somewhere in 2013, it says, well, unable to find a matching retention policy in Active Directory. So what actually happened is that the retention tag or retention policies that were used were deleted, but the ID replication wasn't working very well. So Exchange was sometimes pointing to one domain controller where it had them and the other one it didn't have them. So that was kind of causing some issues. Took a little time to figure it out. So I learned about this command through, you know, Microsoft support, so it's awesome. And since then, I really use it quite, you know, regularly, because it gives you that feedback, that information into why the process, the MFA, couldn't, you know, do certain things. Again, the slide decks are available, so you should be able to get information from there. Now, key thing in troubleshooting, and I'm not going to give you a troubleshooting lesson on how to do that, but, you know, you need to reproduce issues. As I said earlier, the Managed Folder Assistant runs on a daily basis. So you could make a change and wait until the day later and then go through the logs again, which isn't really what you want to do. What you really want to do is, you know, make a change, run the Managed Folder Assistant, check the event logs and make sure it worked or didn't work, right? So the start Managed Folder Assistant is your best friend. It's the same because the mailbox remains on premises. You use that to kick off the process and then check what happened, maybe export the diagnostic logs afterwards, go through the event logs. But eventually, after upping all the logs, going to the point where you're going to check the messages, whether or not they got moved, run the Managed Folder Assistant, and then monitor the event logs. Because, you know, if you wait until one day later, I'll tell you, you'll get thousands of events to dig through, which is not a happy place to be at. So this being said, I think I ended a little bit early, which is great. So we have time for some Q&A. So if you have any questions, please feel free. The mics are there, or shout it out, and I'll repeat it. Yes?
The issues with Outlook going to not responding during an archive move, are they similar to happen if the mailbox is on 365?
Yes. But that's not, it's just due to how Outlook works for several things, yes. It does have less issues when both mailbox and archiving are in the cloud, obviously, because you know the sync in the background that happens is much faster. But yes, that tends to happen from time to time too, because you're having an online mode and then it needs to wait until it gets the confirmation and there's like a hanging operation in the background. So yes, that can happen. Yeah. Yeah.
It shows up like their regular mailbox in the archive. It shows their primary mailbox in the archive. It's like a duplicate of their primary until it exists in our environment.
I have not seen that before, honestly. Typically, so the screenshots that you saw earlier, they actually show an empty archive. And you shouldn't be able to open the archive anyway until it gets provisioned. So that seems like a very specific issue to me. I haven't seen it myself, so maybe we should follow up on that and maybe get support involved because I haven't seen it personally, no.
Okay.
You had a question, yeah, Thomas.
So do you have some experience if the on-premises part is behind the version of the off-premise part? Not exactly the same?
Yeah, it could be in Exchange 2010. It's not a problem. The screenshot that you actually saw was Exchange 2010 against an Office 365 wave for a 15 tenant. So there's no ideally you'd make sure that you know you have the same versions, but it's supported to be in an Exchange 2010 Service Pack 3 on-premises environment hybrid deployment with wave 15. That works. So it's basically the same thing. It's only the hybrid pieces that are different, but the way the Outlook connects to the archive is the same. The way the archive is being created, the provisioning process is the same, so there's no difference there.
Right.
He was first. Sorry.
Just to follow up on that, there was a problem at one time if you had 2010 on-prem and you archive in the service at 2013, you clicked on deleted items in OWA, it would crash.
That was, I would say, during the very early days when they just started switching over, yes, but these are mainly, I haven't seen any similar issues for a long time now.
Mm-hmm.
So there are many ways to go about. One thing that I've noticed is that from a tooling perspective, there are some great tools out there, but sometimes they all behave badly. It's just because of those pesky PST files. They are really horrible to deal with. The rate at which they import, it's slow. I have actually noticed that importing them natively in Exchange sometimes really works much better than having a third-party tool, which calls upon the same principle, though, but doing it manually. The problem is, by doing things manually, it'll cost you more money because you have to spend time. So there is a bunch of data, the PST Explorer, I think it's called, the Microsoft tool, which goes out and find the PSTs. It's a great tool, but you'll stumble across throttling, importing, corrupted PSTs, corrupted items, and that's not because of tooling, it's not because of Exchange, but just because of how PSTs are. Can you safely predict upfront whether you will have issues or how they will arise or what items will be having issues? No, there's no easy way of telling. So it is what it is, unfortunately.
We found, for example, that import PST from the server side of an old ANSI PST would sometimes end up with empty messages, whereas if you took the same PST and did it through Outlook, it's just fine.
Yeah. Well, that's a very good point that you have there. Outlook does a fairly good job with dealing with PSTs because they have a very long, you know, knowledge of dealing with PSTs. The problem there is even more manual, like importing a PST, and you literally have to go there instead of dumping them in a folder. But yes, I have had situations where I had to connect the PST to Outlook, then import it into the mailbox of that user, which, to be quite frankly, we just set the user to do it themselves. We gave them the PST. It's like, hey, do it yourselves. And by the way, do it quickly because we'll remove the ability to use a PST within a few weeks. And they did it. If you give them a deadline, they usually do it. Is it the best user experience? No. That'll be, it's a trade-off that you have to make. Can you do it for them? Yes. Will it be a tedious process? Hell yeah, it will be. So it's all about, you know, what you can do, how big are they, and so forth and so on. But I generally, if you just handed out to them the PST and you said, hey, do us a favor, let's get rid of them, import them into a mailbox, do it on a Friday night and leave your computer running, fine. And that works really well. But sometimes, you know, you don't want your users to get involved. And then you have to, you know, find some tooling, but they all run into the same issues. I haven't had a single tool that was better than the other one. I mean, some are better from a process point of view and options point of view, but they all do the same thing. Open the PST and then read the files. And they all do it the same way, because there's only one way to do it. So, you had a question?
Yeah. My question was, do you have any experience or recommendations for clients that came from EHA to E14 and E15, and that they really don't want to have the online archives available to the end users, but more as a journaling solution? So.
Well, there is no, hold on, let me rephrase that. You cannot journal to a mailbox in Office 365. It's not supported. So if you want to do that, fine. You can set up a journaling rule in Office 365, which journals to an on-premises mailbox. Great. You cannot do the other way around. So if you don't want an online archive, don't enable them. It's as easy as that. Can you use a third-party journaling solution? Sure you can. I know of some customers that have a device sitting in a Perimeter network. Every mail comes through there, and they offload one copy to the journaling solution and one copy to Exchange. Yeah, it's possible. You don't need to use online. I just find them very useful from an end user perspective. But if you don't want to do that, or if you have regulatory needs, that's mainly where journaling kicks in. Then that's when you would use journaling. Yeah. Any other questions? Okay, awesome, perfect. So thank you very much. I'll be around. Please don't forget to fill in your session evals for today. If you have any questions to follow up with, I'll be around in the area. I'll have another session, the UC Architects, coming up. So if you want to, feel free to go there. But other than that, thank you very much, and enjoy the rest of what's left of MEC.